Accession number 21029, Wheel 4.
What's real for?
They were marching up and down, playing, alternating between the Lambeth Walk and the Indian Love Call from Rosemary, and with a banner waving, welcomed the glorious flyers of the Royal Air Force, which was a fairly typical thing in the old patriotic war they were waging. But we were told to be very, very careful and not open our bomb doors while we were running up the aircraft, because we'd taken our bombs out with us, you see, one 12,000 pounder each. And we couldn't understand this. We thought they were our glorious allies. We were rather naive young men, but it was security, really. So we saw very, very little of the Russians. And we were billeted on an old paddle steamer, which was rather infested with woodlice. So we were very pleased to get away from there.
Then, 7th of October, you put operation on Kems, northwest of Basel, in which you were damaged by flak.
Oh, yes, the Kems barrage. That was like a mini dam. Some went in high, some went in low. And the idea was to breach this dam. It was more or less a canal which went out into a huge bay there. I think we lost either two or three on that trip. But I got clobbered a bit. I had an engine knocked out. But other than that, it was fairly straightforward.
Then, 28th of October, return to the Tirpitz.
Yes, we did. And that is one thing I am fairly proud of. We went from Lossiemouth, I think. We flew up to Lossiemouth, fueled up. By this time, you see, the Tirpitz had been taken through a series of fjords and what have you, so that it was coming within range of a return trip from this country, if we were careful. And so we went from Lossiemouth, and it was by this time getting on for Tromso. It was in a great big fjord, huge fjord, mountains all round. And we were followed by 9 Squadron. They were backing us up. And on the way in, and it was a nice, clear sort of presentation, we could see everything, and we could see the Tirpitz about 30 miles away. And suddenly there was a recall, because cloud had started to obscure the target. But by this time we were on our bombing run. And yes, we'd started the bombing run, as I said before. And there was one aircraft up ahead of me. Two of us had decided to go on. It was flown by a flying officer, D.W. Carey of the Royal Australian Air Force, who was a big mate of mine, and he went on in front of me. The rest of the force had wheeled off, so So there we were all on our own, and we decided to run because we could still see the ship. And then it was just like a Hollywood thing, that when you see all these studio-produced shots of aircraft being shot to pieces in the air, I saw this chap, Bill Carey, in front of me, and bits were literally flying off him. And suddenly he wheeled away to the right. More on him in a moment. But we carried on, and we dropped our bomb, and we had got hit as well. I had, as it discovered, I had a shell fairly close to one of my petrol tanks, and I had a burst tire. And we decided that we were going to be a bit short of juice. So we went and we landed at Sumba in the Shetlands. Back to Bill Carey, he just wheeled off and had to head for the mountains in Sweden and managed to find a lake in the middle of these mountains and plonk the aircraft down, and all the crew got out, which is a pretty marvellous thing. It would have been a marvellous thing had he been flying a little clockwork mouse like a tiger moth, but he did it with a 27-ton Lancaster, so Bill Carey was interned and later repatriated. But my little boast is that my crew were the only ones on 617 or 9 for that matter who actually were over and attacked the Tirpitz on all three occasions. So there we were. And we landed at Sunbur, and I managed to scrounge a lift in a bomber version of a bowfighter. And we went over to the mainland and got a Lancaster wheel, which we could just about get into this aircraft. Flew back to the Shetlands, and we bunged it on, or at least we didn't, the engineers did, and we flew back to Woodall Spa. We all got drunk.
What kind of a view of Tirpitz did you have on that second occasion?
I didn't see very much. My bomb aimer saw it for the last time on that run, just as he pressed the button to release the bomb, which was all to the good. I mean, it didn't matter whether he could see it or not, you know, after the bomb had gone. We got a near miss on it, but we didn't hit it. So that was that.
Then November the 12th, the third attack on the Tirpitz, if you can take me through your memories of that, please.
Yes. That was a very clean-cut operation. We took off from one of two airfields, either Lossiemouth or another field down the coast in Scotland. I can't recall the name. I probably will after you've gone. We flew over at about 1,000 feet across the sea until we got up into the Scandinavian area. And then we climbed all the time heading round for the Tirpitz. We climbed up to bombing height. And we spotted it 20 to 30 miles away. It was so gin clear. And we did a run in, and I remember saying to my bomb aimer, "By God, Mac, she's had it today." And we did a run in, and I hung around for a little while to see if I could spot anything. and I couldn't, and I thought, well, you're pushing your luck a bit here now, you know. So we went home, and it wasn't until we got back that a photographic reconnaissance, I dare say it must have been a mosquito, it must have been, came back with the news that it had capsized, and we all got very drunk. But it was a very, very clean-cut, good bombing trip with good visibility, not that much flak. And we were also lucky because had the German fighters been warned and vectored towards us, there wouldn't have been too many of us left.
Then we come into December 1944, and 15th of December, an attack on Imeuden, you put severe flak damage.
Yes, we did. We had a front turret knocked out. Well, it was bad enough, it was drafty.
Any other memories of that attack?
Well, I remember by this time I didn't have my original crew with me. Some of them had gone tour expired, and I had a Royal Australian air gunner, a flying officer, in my front turret. And this piece of large piece of flak came. It decimated the turret. He was knocked back completely and utterly unscathed, with the biggest piece of shrapnel you've ever seen in all your life, as much larger than a dinner plate, which he has to this day in Australia. So, and then the rest of the turret disintegrated. I think we lost a tire on that one as well. But it was so amusing because, as you can see by the date, I mean, we were winning the war quite comfortably then, and it was only a short trip. And to have that happen to you then, it's been insulting. You know.
Then you put in another night raid on the 21st of December to Politz near Stettin.
Mm. Yes, we were briefed to bomb this particular target, whatever it was, but we were told that if anything went wrong with our bomb sites, we were not to bomb because there was a displaced persons camp only a few hundred yards away. So we went to Stettin. It was a fairly long old trip. And what should happen? My bomb site went unserviceable about 10 minutes from the target. And I was carrying a 12,000 pounder. And I wasn't going to drop it in the sea because it was a hell of a waste. These were not sort of dustbins full of HE. These were machine-turned precision bombs. So I brought it back. And that's the only time I ever brought a bomb back. And I landed. Actually, that was one of the nights when they used the FIDO, Fog Intensive Dispersal Operation. And they were burning it at Metheringham. And I remember coming back, because it was very foggy, and I was invited to go in to Metheringham. And I took one look at it, and it looked like Dante's Inferno down there, with all these aircraft coming in, and the fires from FIDO burning along the runway. So I went back to a station I knew, Coningsby and called up, and they let me land, and I did a very split type of approach with this damn thing on board. And of course we didn't have a lot of petrol, so the all-up weight wasn't terrific, even with the bomb on board, and I landed there. But I wasn't very happy about it because, as I say, I brought my bomb back.
Then your logbook says 29th of December, Rotterdam?
Yes. I'm afraid you'll have to excuse me on that one.
30th of December, Ijmuiden again? And then, perhaps you remember Bergen?
Yes, I do.
12th of January.
Yes, well, we were briefed to bomb various targets in Bergen. We had been going to drop some Royal Marine Commandos in a special modified, we were in special modified Lancasters. We were going to drop them to go into Bergen, and we in fact practiced with them down near Exeter with these chaps, but it was called off because they thought the margin for error wasn't a great one, and also the height we had to drop them, there was some doubt as to whether we would be able to climb up out of the harbour we were in to get up and out again. So we went to Bergen, escorted by Polish Mustangs. And we got to Bergen and we could see the old Mustangs there and, oh, this is fine. And then these Mustangs, of course, being Poles, they loathed and detested the enemy. So the last we saw of them was diving down and strafing anything they could see in the harbour, leaving us more or less unprotected. We didn't know that then. I mean, we just saw, oh, they're having a good time. And then we did our bombing run, and my target was a particular ship, which I hit, and it was beached. But that was fairly straightforward. But when we were milling around, I saw an aircraft go, a single engine aircraft go flashing past. And I thought, good old Mustang, until I realised it had a black cross on it. And there was a training station nearby, an FW-190 OTU. And they had got in amongst us. And then down below, as I was flying along, I saw an aircraft, one of ours, which was being pumped into with cannon shell by an FW-190. And this Lancaster wheeled off, and I'd done my bombing, so I called up to see if I could have permission to escort him out of the area. And the leader said yes. So I followed him out. And about 20 miles out at sea, he was losing height all the time. He'd lost two engines. And he was another old mate, another Australian. And he ditched on the sea. It was a copybook ditching. The sea was smooth. It was a beautiful day. But nonetheless, he did rather well to get that aircraft down. And they all got out, and the aircraft was floating. So I signalled back where I was. We sent it back in code. We didn't talk at all. We couldn't have reached the UK anyway. And we were summoning the air sea rescue or the airborne lifeboats or whatever there was to come out and pick these chaps up. But in the meantime, an FW-190 appeared, by which time we were coming down quite quickly, and we managed to fire our guns. Who's ever heard of a Lancaster attacking an FW-190? But we did. And he went away. So there we were, settled down, watching these poor chaps standing on the wing. And then my signaller got a message through that there was an airborne, like one of these converted Wellingtons, used to carry, slung in their bomb bay, a fully equipped air sea rescue ship, you know, not a dinghy, a proper ship. And it was on its way. Well, we had to leave anyway because we were very, very short of juice and we were still off the coast of Norway. So we went back. And unfortunately, the aircraft got near, the air sea rescue aircraft got near, but some more fighters came out and they were driven off. And these chaps just went down, they were drowned. And that was a very sad thing because he was a very good mate of mine. But that's why I remember Bergen. You only remember the bits that, you know, were out of the ordinary. The other things you tend to forget. I mean, I've got two or three more trips in another logbook, which is over in Chesterfield, but they have no great import at all. So I think we might be getting near the end of this little...
You haven't said what you felt about flying the Lancaster.
Well, I thought the Lancaster was the finest heavy aircraft that one could wish for in those days. I loved that aircraft, and we still do, those of us who gather and talk about it. It was a very fine aircraft indeed. We used to say it was like a four-engine fighter. Well, that's exaggerating a bit. But it was so far advanced in its performance that... I love that aircraft.
You said that you got to know Cheshire later. Have you any more memories of Cheshire?
Well, yes and no. He always gave the impression that he was never telling you anything. He might be suggesting or advising. And he would listen to you if you, in your ignorance, came up with what you thought was a great idea. And he'd probably seen it all before. There was that. He played an excellent game of tennis, because that's how I got to know him. I played a bit of tennis when I was young, and he was an Oxford Blue, or half Blue, I think, with Oxford, with tennis. And he was always unassuming. We had two COs like that. The one who followed him, James Tate, who led us on the Tirpitz. I mean, we go back to the Munich and Milan thing. That was the last trip Cheshire did with us. And James Tate was the same way. no flamboyance about them at all. But he was a kindly man, was Cheshire, who calculated everything. I mean, if he told you that it was possible to fly under Westminster Bridge, then you say, well, the boss said so, and you'll do it, you know. A most lovable, likeable man. Without getting on to religion, which I'm not desperately religious, he was a true Christian, which he proved in his later days.
What do you think about the criticisms of Bomber Command that have been made since the war?
Well, it's quite fashionable, isn't it? You always denigrate the things you don't know very much about. And if somebody, I think really, and this is purely a personal opinion, we were all volunteers to a man on Bomber Command. And nobody really likes a volunteer, particularly these days. And what they don't realise, these critics of particularly the raid which sticks in everybody's mind, what they don't realise is that people who went out night after night did more for the morale of this country at that time than anybody else. We had nobody, but nobody, fighting in Europe. And I have experienced the love or admiration of Londoners who, once they'd learned that one was on bombers, one could have the top pick off the chimney. I'm not answering your question. I think it is fashionable to shout down anybody who has gone a bit beyond the mark. And we in Bomber Command, those of us who are left, we cannot describe the disgust and contempt in which we hold these people who would throw eggs at Arthur Harris's statue and insult the Queen Mother and all this sort of thing. I'm not educated enough to be more lucid about it. I'm just quite disgusted that this country has come to what it has.
Thank you very much.